Welcome to Buccaneers Total Access.
Fire the cannon!
With head coach Dirk Cutter.
What's it looking like? Goes a deep route toward Mike Evans. He hangs on! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Mike Evans goes up and takes it away from two defenders. What a great throw by Winston!
Now here's your host, T.J. Reeves, along with the head coach of your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Dirk Cutter.
And welcome in on a Monday evening post-Christmas to another edition of Buccaneers Total Access tonight. Here with the head coach as the Buccaneers come off of another tough football game with the New Orleans Saints on Sunday, and now get ready this week to wrap up the regular season with the Carolina Panthers. Coach, good to see you after the Christmas holiday, and I know it's back to a work day Monday today after a tough battle on Christmas Eve with the Saints. So welcome in. I know a tough game on Saturday, and you've been looking at it now a couple of different times on tape. What are your thoughts as we begin here on how that one finished up?
Well, anytime you get beat in this league, you're not too fired up about it. So you're always looking at the reasons why, things that we need to do better, both playing wise and coaching wise, and you know that's what Mondays in the NFL are all about. They're putting this previous game to bed and then figuring out what you're going to do different, getting ready for the next week.
You obviously did some things well, especially in the second half of the game. I know when we talked to you in the post game on Sunday night, the beginning to the second half is not what you would want, but you said to us then you snapped into attention and played better. What went well to get you back in the game and give you the chance to win?
Well, we made a few plays on offense. We didn't We got the ball rolling. We that first drive after the turnover in the second half, that first touchdown drive, we actually ran the ball consistently in that drive. Charles Sims had an explosive run in there. Jacquizz had a couple of really good runs. They weren't quite explosive runs, but they were really good runs. And then we finished it off with a red zone touchdown run. So, you know, we were able to run the ball right at them a little bit. And that slowed that pass rush down. And then, just the way the second half unfolded, you get to a certain point where time and score dictates that you have to pick up your tempo. We went a fair amount of no huddle throughout the game anyway, both in 12 personnel and 11 personnel. But, we were able to make a few plays.
You know, you talked about this, and we've talked about it a bunch, playing a team for the second time in three games, almost back-to-back, if you will. Were the Saints doing a lot of the same things? Did they throw in some different wrinkles as this game went on, or was it pretty much what you had seen and it was trying to make plays, both teams the same way?
Well, the Saints' defense was pretty much the same. Offensively, they made a much more concerted effort to run the ball at us out of 12 personnel and some 21 personnel, some two tight ends and some single tight end, two backs, and then also they hadn't shown much with a jumbo tight end, an extra lineman in a tight end, and that was another thing they did. And you know, when we look back at it, that's probably a move they made based on the fact that Will Golston was out, and they felt like they could get a little bit of an advantage at the line of scrimmage.
You know, another thing that went into this game is you obviously had loud crowd, loud environment, and the Saints got up early. How did you feel your team handled it and remained composed throughout this game to give yourself a chance to win at the end?
Well, we handled the crowd noise okay. I mean, that part, we've done a decent job of that all season, and we have played in some loud places, and the Mercedes Dome there in New Orleans is one of the loudest places in the league. That wasn't an issue. This game, you're playing a division rival team and two teams that go at it pretty good. I thought our guys, especially on offense, might have got a little bit over the edge as far as after the whistle activities. And when you look at the tape, I think both teams were at fault on that, but I mean, I'm concerned with our team, and we came out of halftime down one score. We have those three bad plays right in a row to start the second half. Now we're down two scores. It's just tough to be down two scores with less than 30 minutes to play when Drew Brees is on like he was, and the fact that we weren't able to take the ball away and we turned it over twice ourselves.
One of the differences, too, in this game from the previous meeting is you were able to hold them, obviously, out of the end zone the entire game, but also hold them out of the end zone even when they got in the red zone. This time, they were able to convert with touchdowns. Was that as big a key as anything, that once they got the opportunity, they made the most of the opportunity and got seven instead of three?
I think that's, you know, a part of it. I don't think it's the biggest thing. I think the biggest thing is still comes back to they have no turnovers and we have two. And, you know, our turnovers lead to one touchdown by them, and our second turnover, we were already in field goal range. So, you know, that's, you're always playing that what if game, but that's at least a 10 point swing right in there. So, we had our opportunities, and we didn't play good enough. We didn't coach good enough in this game, and New Orleans, on this night deserved to beat us.
You mentioned too there was a play, and we talked to you about it Sunday night after the game. A completion to Kobe Fleener. It was originally called a completion, and then it was later overturned as an incompletion. With the understanding, again, as I prefaced it the other night, there was a ton of football that was going to be played after that play. It's a huge momentum play in that moment because you were going to be inside the red zone with a first and 10. I wonder if you would follow up for the audience tonight that you said in the dynamic you felt like the officials there called it as a completed pass to have it go to replay. Can you pick up on that same point for tonight and that whole dynamic?
All right, well, when the play happened, if you think back to what happened at the game, there was no immediate signal, and the officials came together and huddled. All right, so that usually tells you that there might have been a difference in a difference of opinion between the officials of if it was complete or not. So the way I understand it, when they have plays like that that could possibly result in a turnover, to force it to go to review, they will rule it like it was a turnover. Then that all turnovers are reviewed, so that makes them take a look at it upstairs. Once it went upstairs, it's totally out of our hands. It's out of our hands anyway, but it's totally out of our hands once it goes to replay. And then, that whole what's a catch, what isn't a catch, 2 feet. It doesn't even matter. They're gonna call it how they're gonna call it based on, it's a complicated rule, and they determined it was incomplete. So there was really, it would have been a really nice momentum changer for us, because like you said, we were down in the red zone, but it didn't work out that way. So we just got to keep playing.
And in the dynamic of that, they have been instructed, the officials, do not blow the whistle if there is uncertainty there, because blowing the whistle then nullifies any chance to go and review. So that plays into part of what you were talking about, right?
Yeah, the whole blowing the whistle thing in the NFL, they blow very, very late whistles just in general. So, I'm not sure exactly how they've been instructed. But, the way that whole thing worked out, I think they handled it correctly, the way they mechanically did it, and they took it to replay. So it was what it was.
And you have said this already here in this segment, that this team, essentially in the five-game win streak, especially in the final four of those five games, was able to get a critical turnover, or maybe even a couple of them, when it had to happen. And unfortunately, you weren't able to get that in this game. That's looming as one of the big reasons why the Saints were able to hang on. You weren't able to turn them over the same way you had turned them over, for example, a couple of weeks earlier in Tampa with the game on the line in the fourth quarter, right?
The way we always look at it is the two most important stats in every game are turnovers and explosive plays. And, we were minus two in turnovers, and they were critical. They led to points, or they led to points and prevented us from getting points, both. And then as far as explosive plays go, we both, by our count, we both had six. They had six. We had six. Their six were longer than our six. And six is below the number that we feel like we need. So, when you turn it over twice and you're not creating at least eight explosives on offense, even though you get 24 points, it may not be enough. And, we put our defense in a very short field there to start the second half, and we weren't able to get any takeaways. So it was going to be a close game. And when Breeze is hot, we weren't able to put as much pressure on him as we did in the first game. He did a good job of stepping up through the pocket and making plays, after he'd stepped up through the pressure, and it just didn't go our way.
That is the head coach, Dirk Cutter. It's Buccaneers Total Access here for a Monday night. We will continue, and we will also, obviously, before this show is done, be talking a little bit about the Carolina Panthers, who will be the opponent coming up this Sunday. Stay with us on a Monday night. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter now continues on 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the Buccaneers.
And we do continue on a Monday evening as the Buccaneers have come back from the Christmas holiday yesterday and now get ready to prepare to play the Carolina Panthers coming up on Sunday. We were talking there in the first segment about the finish up to this game. A couple of things coming out of the game. Mike Evans, we didn't talk in the first segment about his touchdown catch in the second half. At that point, the game is still very much within your possibility, within your grasp. Let's go back to that play with the benefit of coach's tape and having seen it from up high in a couple of different angles about that play and about the big impact that it was at that point in the game.
Well, we just got through talking about not having very many explosive plays. That was our biggest explosive play of the night, a 34-yard touchdown. We had a screen pass on with a check. If we have man coverage, we were going to check to a drop-back pass route with Mike on a corner. Jameis read it correctly, got us in the right check. Mike did a great job releasing off the line of scrimmage. He won at the line of scrimmage. That's the key. And there was a lot of hand fighting going on. I felt like, there was a lot of reaction from the crowd that maybe that should have been offensive interference. I think both guys were fighting for position. I think the DB actually interfered with Mike, and then Mike did a good job of maintaining his balance and getting some separation at the end. And for Mike to make that catch on a difficult angle and then still get it in the end zone was a heck of a play by him.
And when Buck fans see plays like that, I know they expect those. They are difficult plays, but those are plays where he has been great in college and great with the Buccaneers of go up, outfight the defender, big catch radius. Those are the kind of plays that you almost now have come to expect Mike to be able to come down with, and it's huge in that moment, obviously, when he does make those plays.
Well, yeah, people do come to expect him to make those plays. I can assure everyone that those plays are a lot harder to make than they may appear. And, you know, what most teams have gone to strategic-wise against Mike is really trying to hold him at the line of scrimmage and, not let him get going with that long stride of his and get his speed going. And, the NFL has let a lot of hand fighting go this year, and it's gotten progressively more aggressive on both sides, both offensively and defensively, as this season has worn on. And I think a lot of times those type of plays, I think sometimes bigger receivers, and when I came from Atlanta, we had a couple big receivers there, and Julio Jones and Roddy White. I think sometimes bigger receivers are discriminated a little bit against based on their size when some of that pushing and shoving is going on, that sometimes it makes it look like the offensive guy is doing more than he really is.
And when you're calling plays, and we saw, for example, you've thrown receiver screens, tunnel screens throughout the year. You threw one to Mike on Sunday. When you're going through your different plays, how much is that affected by what is being allowed to happen, not happen, and you're trying to get him free and trying to get him the ball? How much are you weighing that as you're calling plays and going along in a game?
Well, you weigh that out during the week because you already know how the other team's going to play. I mean, there's not a lot of surprises on that come game day. So as far as our wide receiver screens, we threw four or five of them the other night. We threw one to Josh Huff. We threw one to Mike Evans. We threw technically a wide receiver screen out there to Charles Sims. We had pretty good success with those plays, but we had a couple times where we were just one step away from maybe making those huge plays.
That's all part of the strategy and the give and take. Back to Mike Evans for a second. Since we've talked to you last on this show, he has been named to his first Pro Bowl. You have been around him now for two seasons, OTAs, training camp, preseason. Can you just speak more to his development and the ascension that we have seen and now the recognition he's getting for being one of the best receivers in the league?
Sure. I think Mike has worked very hard to be, third or fourth receiver in NFL history to have three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons to start his career. I think Mike has just been so much more of a consistent player this year. He's tried not to let that little hand fighting and calls that don't go in his favor, you know, that used to get under Mike's skin so much last year that he spent more time arguing with the ref than he did playing. And he hasn't been doing that at all this year. He's really controlled his emotions a lot better. He's playing harder and faster in the running game. He's bending on his routes. He's catching low balls. Last year, you know, by his own admission, he had more drops than we'd like him to have. Hasn't had that issue at all this year. And I think Mike being voted to the Pro Bowl is, he's a very worthy player, and he's one of the top guys in the league. He's having a heck of a year. He's our MVP on offense. There's no doubt.
Attention to detail is another thing that I would wonder, because, I mean, attention to detail on route running. Attention to detail, you've talked with us, and offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach Todd Monken has talked repeatedly about where are your hands, where are your eyes, details like that. Would you say that attention to detail has helped him in the progress as well?
Absolutely. And I think Todd Monken has done a really fine job with him. I had a feeling when I asked Todd to come join us here that Todd would be a big help to Mike, but it still comes down to the player buying in and following up. I compliment both those guys on that.
Another player that continues to excel, and I know he got banged up at the end of the game. We'll talk about that in a minute. Cameron Brait, another good game on Saturday. He tied a Buccaneer tight end record with the legendary Jimmy Giles with his 8th touchdown catch on the season, had that in the first half. Just assess how he played on Sunday, and again, his development continues, even with other teams, coach, trying to key on Cameron Brady, still able to get open, still able to make plays.
Yeah, Cam, as we said on last time we were together, I think, or maybe in the pregame show, that Cam is one of those guys that has gotten stronger as the year's gone on here. And late in the season, some guys' bodies tend to wear down, and they maybe tail off a little bit, but Cam has gotten better and better each week. And his numbers show that. He's playing good football for us.
Yeah, and we mentioned the injury to him. I don't know if you have an update at all on him or his status when he went out in the game. I know he was trying to get back into the game, was trying to get loosened up over on the sideline, and simply could not. And I wonder, again, when you lose him and he's such a pass-catching weapon, how does that affect, if at all, what you're trying to do on offense, your play calls, as the game wore on Saturday?
Well, Cam's been fighting a sore lower back and upper hip area. He's been fighting that for several weeks, and he does do a great job of taking care of his body and working on it. And it just so happened he caught a little check down from Jameis. It ended up getting nullified by a penalty that when he went down, he got hit right on that spot. And it really aggravated that to the point where he couldn't even sit down. And it was right on in the tailbone area, just above that. He's still very sore today as they came in for meetings. And as far as, it's too late at that point in the third quarter. You know, it's too late to change your game plan. I mean, that's why you have extra players. You have, we have a veteran that's been a pass-catching tight end in his career in Brandon Myers. And at that point, he has to step in. Brandon ended up with 2 catches. Thought we had him another opportunity that, just didn't work out. But, Brandon, like all guys, I mean, there's going to be a time when your backup players have to go in there and they're expected to play well. They're not going to play exactly the same because they're not the same guy as the guy that they're replacing. But I thought Brandon went in there and did fine.
You mentioned earlier, too, Jaquizz Rodgers and running the ball, and he averaged over 4 yards a carry, again, with the benefit now of having watched the coach's tape. What stands out about the way he played? Did he get a touchdown in the second half of the game as well? But say something about Jaquizz Rodgers back in there and getting a steady workload.
Well, steady. You just said the word steady, and that probably is the word that most describes Jaquizz's style. I mean, the very first play of the game, we get a 13-yard run, an explosive, then we had the rushing touchdown there in the third quarter. I thought Jaquizz and Charles Sims both did a nice job. We didn't have the ball very much in the first half. You know, we didn't get to run it. We were running the ball fairly efficiently, minus that 1 3rd and 1 on the second drive of the game where we were short one. We didn't ID it right, and we were short a player. We needed to adjust our blocking scheme there. But I thought the 2 running backs that played, Jaquizz and Chuck, were solid all night.
Vernon Hargraves is another guy that I wanted to ask you about on Sunday. Obviously a top 10 pick. You've put him in as a starter basically from the very beginning of this season. Just say something overall about his development, and here we are now to the 15th game of the season, his rookie year, not used to playing this many games in college right in a row without a break for a bowl game. But what about Vernon Hargraves to this point in the year?
Well, Vernon overall has had a fine year and definitely shown why he was a top pick. I think he's going to be a top corner in this league. He started off playing two positions, both nickel and corner. We think he's done better. I think he would say the same thing. He enjoys it more when he can just stay at corner. I think he has steadily improved throughout the season. And unfortunately, with that said, he did not have his best game on Saturday. He got a couple rough breaks. He was right there on a slant play. Should have been a 5-yard gain. There's nothing wrong with a slant, but then he missed a tackle, and it turned into a 40-yard gain, and he kind of rolled his ankle a little bit. You know, he got bumped around a little bit. He wasn't full speed for the game, but, Vernon, I think he's going to be a heck of a player for a long time here. It just wasn't his best night on Saturday.
There was one specific play after all that happened that you described where he'd gone out of the game a couple times where he had to run down the field with Brandon Cooks on a long one, and Cooks has made big play after big play this season, and Vernon was able to track down and knock down that football in that instance. And that's a potential game-breaking play for the Saints where he's able to recover, knock the ball down. And again, you've now seen that play a couple of times on the coach's tape. What else do you want to say on that one?
Oh man, TJ, you're killing me here. What I'd like to say is it should have been an interception because it hit him right in his hands. That's what I'd like to say about it. How's that?
I understand. It could have been one of those in that moment, too, against one of the more dangerous players.
Hey, well, that just shows his catch-up speed because sure. I think Cooks was probably the fastest player on the field in the game, and that showed up. And he did get behind Vernon. Vernon did a good job of catching up. And that just kind of shows the kind of game it was, though, overall, because we've been catching those balls. We've been making those plays. And I think if you just look at Vernon's reaction after that play, he's not jumping around because he's happy that he knocked it down. He's jumping around because he's upset that he didn't catch it. Now, that was a third down play. We ended up getting the ball back on the very next play anyway.
Yep, and that's obviously, as you mentioned, turnovers have been a part of that. Brent Grimes had an opportunity at one, two, and it's a game of inches where he has to hustle from depth and got hands on the ball inches away on that one. It is sometimes a game of inches.
Well, the same exact thing there. Brent, on that play, when you really look at it, he laid out. His body was parallel to the ground. But Brent expects to make that interception. And there again, as he's coming off the field, everybody's telling him, good job, good job, good job. I know Brent well enough. I was looking right at his face, and he was disappointed that he didn't intercept it, because that ball, that would have given us the ball on somewhere around the 25 or the 30-yard line. That would have been another, really major turnover.
Again, it is Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter tonight. By the way, coming up in our next segment, we'll have assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer with us, and then we will also mention the finale here with the head coach and the Carolina Panthers in our final segment. And we're talking some about some individual players that have done some things well. You went back to a young man, Devontae Lambert, who had been playing earlier in the year because of injury. It necessitated him being out there some. You have another young player in Noah Spence. Just overall, watching the defensive line again on the tape, give us an assessment of how they played, especially the young guys that were back in there.
Well, we, as you said, Devontae Lambert had to come in and play some fair amount of snaps for us earlier in the year. His kind of his coming out party was in that Monday night game against Carolina, and due to the absence of Will Golston, he was pressed back into service for this game. He hasn't been out there for a while. He gave good effort. He played hard. But, just all in all, our defensive line did not have the same kind of success that we had 2 weeks ago when we played New Orleans.
You mentioned they were using extra blockers some. Were they doing, and they had Kuhn in the game at tight end some, were they doing different things to max protect? Was it very similar to the game previously, or did they make some adjustment to try to give Drew Brees an extra half second or so?
No, it was quite a bit different. As we said earlier, they didn't make as many changes on the defensive side, but they changed substantially in the way that they attacked us on offense, their offense against our defense.
You have been doing this, obviously, long enough now that especially with first-year players, rookies, guys like Hargraves we're talking about, or Lambert, or new guy Peyton Barber, who you've had in here, when they are a young player and a rookie that has not played a bunch in December, when, again, they're used to the season being done, what is the challenge to keep them fresh mentally and physically? Because here, again, you needed them Sunday. You may have need for them again this coming Sunday in what is a 16th game this week.
Yeah, I think that's something that you have to work on all year. I think that starts all the way back in training camp and how you conduct your walkthroughs, your training camp schedule, how you preach to these guys and to take care of their bodies, how we, you know, try to get them to go in the cryo tanks and their nutrition and their rest. And we talk about that from day one all the way through. We also talk to the young guys about modeling some of our older guys. And at the D-line position, you know, you got two great veterans there, three great veterans in Gerald and Robert Ayers and Clinton McDonald. I haven't really seen that. I mean, I've heard some media members talking about that rookie wall, but I haven't really, in my experience, seen a whole lot of that.
It's one of those things, as you said, if you're in condition, you're in shape, you're playing, right? You're just playing and you keep playing.
Well, I mean, in the NFL, you've only got so many guys, so there's not too many other options.
That is what you have to do. All right, Coach, stand by. Thank you. We will talk more with you in our final segment. We have assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer coming up straight ahead as Buccaneers Total Access continues for a Monday night. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network.
This is Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cotter on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the Buccaneers.
We are back in on a Monday evening. Buccaneers preparing for the Carolina Panthers. Head coach Dirk Cotter will be back with us in our final segment. We've got assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer sitting here with us, also former player in the league. Got so much to talk about. First of all, it's the day after Christmas. I know we played a game on Saturday. We're back from the Christmas holiday. Everybody back at work. How are you? Thank you. And I know we've had a Christmas holiday. Everything all right as we're going back to work now?
Everything is okay. I wouldn't say all right, but okay. Things could be better. Could have came off a Christmas break with the victory, but unfortunately that did not happen. So outside of, you know, Christmas and, you know, the outside, you know, giving and receiving presents and things like that, back at work.
Back at work, and here we go. All right, so back to that game for a couple of moments on Saturday. Having played a team just a couple of weeks earlier, I wonder, because we were just talking with the head coach about this part too, did New Orleans do a lot of different stuff in terms of the defensive line with blocking schemes? Was it pretty much the same that you had seen before? Did they make some adjustments on Saturday, Coach?
I mean, it was pretty much the same as far as adjusting. You know, the first game, they came out in a little bit more 11 personnel where there's three receivers, one tight end, one running back. This game, they came out more two back sets where you've seen Kuhn was in the game a little bit more with the tight end, 86. I think he played more of this game, and they wanted to run the ball. I mean, the first game, I think they had less than 30 yards rushing. And I think even playing in New Orleans years ago, you know, when Sean can have that balance of running the ball as well as, you know, you got one of the best quarterbacks in the game with Drew Brees, you know, they're very hard to beat. And unfortunately, they ran the ball. They wasn't gashing us, I mean, but they got enough. And with some of the pass plays they had, getting themselves in third and manageables, and we call them battle downs here. And those downs, you know, they're hard to stop, and that's why we call them battle downs. But they were able to win those battle downs. I mean, we looked at our third down conversion. We were okay at 63%, but still we had too many third and shorts. I mean, we had four of them, and that's way too many for a game. You like to have – I mean, league average is like one and a half, but we have four. So that's hard to stop offense, especially one of the best offenses in the league with four third and ones.
And one of the things you have to credit, Mark Ingram being down there at field level, and you know this, you're down there every week, but he ran tough. He ran through tackles at times, and sometimes you just got to credit his toughness got them second effort and got a first down a couple of different times where he maybe – should have been stopped, and other running backs might would have been stopped in those instances.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't take nothing from Mark Ingram. I mean, he is one of the top 10 backs, in my opinion, in this league. I mean, he didn't win the Heisman Trophy for nothing. You know, and he's a good back. He ran very well and very hard in the game on Sunday. And it comes down to, you know, man on man. You got to, you know, they blocked it up. There was a lot of one-on-ones going on, and you got to win those one-on-one battles. I mean, we talk about that all the time as a defense staff. We have to win our one-on-one battles. If you don't, I mean, that's what offenses want. They want the one-on-ones, and we can't go one-for-one. We like the more two-on-one. When they got to stay on one guy, two guys got to stay on one guy, that's a win for the defense, because that means there's somebody in our defensive scheme that should be open to make the hit. And sometimes we were open, we just didn't make the hit.
That's the voice of assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer with us tonight, giving us some breakdown of the game on Sunday. Hey, Gerald McCoy, from this game, we saw him making some plays in this game, named now to his fifth consecutive Pro Bowl last week. Just say something about being in that meeting room on the practice field with him and watching it on games on Sunday, being around number 93, if you would.
I mean, it's a pleasure to, you know, have an opportunity to coach such a talent like Gerald McCoy. You know, the great thing about Gerald is that he comes to work and he puts in the work that needs to be done so he can be the Gerald McCoy we need him to be on Sunday. And that's one of the things that I think he don't get enough credit for, is that he comes out, he plays hurt. I mean, he practices hurt, and he's about getting better. And that's one of those guys that he is one of our leaders on this team. He's been to the Pro Bowls like he's been because of the way he comes in and prepares himself as a player. He's a true pro. If you're going to emulate yourself after a player, he's the type of guy you want the young guys to look up to and say, hey, this is how you do it. You know, are you going to be Gerald McCoy and you know, be a Pro Bowl guy five times? Maybe, maybe not. But the fact of the matter is, if you follow his lead, you're still going to be productive. You'll still be a guy that we can count on, we can trust, and do the right thing on and off the field, because that's what it's all about.
You know, we've talked with Robert Ayers on these Buccaneers Total Access shows too. Clint McDonald also the same way. When those veteran players have battled through injury like what you're talking about, when they are putting in the work, film room, meeting room, practice field, and then you see it show up on Sunday, when you have young players like a Noah Spence, we were talking about this with the head coach just before you came on, players like a Devontae Lambert, mm-hmm. who was active and played a bunch Sunday, how much does that help for the coaching staff to have examples, models of, look how hard they have worked to take care of their body, the effort they're putting in during the week, and how it translates into the play on Sunday, Coach?
I mean, to have those type of guys, it really just validates what the coach is saying. I mean, you could just turn and say, pointing to Clinton, pointing to Ayers, pointing to Gerald. Having those type of guys around a young guy like Noah Spence, you know, Lambert and Ward and those guys, to be able to look at and say, you know what? Hey, I need to listen and, you know, be a sponge. I mean, when it comes down to being a rookie, you need to come in and be a sponge. I mean, just soak in, especially when you got good leadership like we have. We're blessed to have good leadership from guys like Clinton and Gerald and those guys. Soak it up. You know, soak it up, because here's the example. Here's the model. If you want to play in this league, Gerald's going on, I think, his sixth, seventh year. You know, Ayers 9 years, Clinton 8 years. If you want to be in this league and want to be around, this is how you do it. And I think it just validates what the coaches, because sometimes as coaches, and I played and I've heard it, and I mean, you kind of sit there and say, yeah, all right, coach, all right, whatever. But when you got a guy that's, you know, right there, right, in your bird eye view, doing it day in and day out, it definitely helps. And I mean, we benefiting across the board to have those type of guys in our room.
I have just a couple minutes left with assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer, who just read my mind, I think, here on Buccaneers Total Access. So you played, now you are coaching. Just real quick, what's the biggest adjustment to now having to get your point across and empower and coach up a player, as opposed to when you were a player, you're receiving the coaching and it's up to you to go do it? How has that adjustment been for you?
I mean, you know what? It's been a great adjustment by the means of, I've been around some great coaches and allowed me to, you know, as a young coach, soaking up from those guys, learning mm-hmm. from those guys, learning from Joe Cullen last year and in previous when I was in Jacksonville coaching, and learning from Jay Hayes, you know, and then on top of that, because I played the game, when I'm explaining to these guys, breaking it down step by step, understanding how to play a blaze block, a cutout block, a reach block, I'm not just talking from X and O standpoint. I'm talking about experience and you know, sometimes you got a guy that want to, you know, give you a little, whatever, you know, but I'm like, wait a minute, buddy. I'm not, we're not just sitting there. I was riding those shoes just 6 years ago.
They were trying to cut block me.
Absolutely. You know, they got to understand that having pad level, having a flat back, having their hands out in front of their eyes, taking a proper step, being violent with their hands. That's the thing about playing defensive line. It's about being violent. That's the greatest position to me, you know, not only because I played it, because hey, you're down there, you can get after somebody in a violent manner, and you ain't got to worry about getting arrested. You can just have fun. And you know, we try to get that point across to our guys, and I think for the most part this year, we've seen a lot of guys really step up and their game elevated. And again, going back to drilling those guys, having those guys being examples, that helps us as well. But you know, as a young coach, learning, it's been a transition, and I'm enjoying the ride. I mean, I enjoy coming to work every day. I get here 5:30 in the morning, and I look forward to it, man. Getting ready for the next opponent.
And that is a perfect segue, because you have to scoot now, and so do we, because you're getting ready for Carolina. That's the next opponent. I promised you the time would fly. It has flown. Assistant defensive line coach Paul Spicer, thank you. We appreciate it on Buccaneers Total Access.
Thank you.
And we will continue with the head coach coming up. Stay with us. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network.
You're listening to Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cotter on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the Bucs.
We do come back in on a Monday night here with head coach Dirk Cotter. Buccaneers will play the final game of the 2016 regular season with the Carolina Panthers in a rematch game coming Sunday. We'll talk more about that in a moment. We haven't talked specifically about Jameis Winston. You mentioned him a couple of times earlier in the show. Just assess this game and assess, as you go into the final game here, what you like and what still you're always looking to improve, what needs to be better, not just this week but moving forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're the first overall pick, and we all have high expectations for Jameis, but nobody has higher expectations than he does for himself. So, you know, the quarterback is going to get maybe a little bit too much credit when things are going right, and maybe a little too much blame when things aren't going right. So, you know, Jameis made some beautiful plays in the game. You already talked about the touchdown to Mike, the touchdown to Cam. He made some other really nice plays. He made some nice scramble plays. But he also had some throws that he'd like to get back. And, you know, again, we're at the end of Jameis's second season, his second regular season almost up. I think he continues to improve. I think he does a lot of things well. I think, you know, we still need to get some more explosive players around Jameis. I think that will also help him. You know, one man can only do so much. We need to take some things off Jameis. I mean, he can't win games all by himself. I still think that there's no question that we have a very bright future with Jameis as our leader. And you know, I'm really fired up about the future, but I'm really more fired up about let's finish this thing off against Carolina next week.
You mentioned Carolina. They are going to be the final opponent coming for this game. And again, it's unusual because you have not seen them now going all the way back to October. And they didn't have Cam Newton that night either. So obviously it is now almost 3 months later, and Cam Newton is scheduled to play in that game on Sunday. So what's the challenge and the difference there, first of all, with him being in there, obviously?
Well, he's the reigning MVP of the league. So that's the main challenge. And, you know, Cam is one of the most explosive players in this league, not only with his arm. He's a heck of a deep ball thrower. He's hard to sack, great scrambler, but also on design quarterback runs. They haven't been doing that quite as much recently with Cam since he came back from his concussion. But, you know, that's a threat at any time. And so, both teams, when you look at the rosters from the first game and you look at the rosters now, both teams have undergone transformation in some positions. And, you know, that's the thing we're working on today is, you know, putting the plan together on both sides of the ball.
They obviously played well in the Monday night game against the Redskins, did not play well in the home game with the Falcons. One thing we've seen, and we saw it in the Monday night game that you played in Charlotte, takeaways, turnovers, the opportunity for that. I know we were mentioning it earlier in the show. Is that going to be one of the biggest factors in this game, those opportunities at getting the short field, if not a defensive score against Carolina?
Well, turnovers, that's a big factor in every game. And Carolina's won two out of their last three. They went through a rough patch. They've kind of gotten back on track. They're running the ball better. Greg Olsen just had became like I think the second guy in NFL history to have three 1,000 yard receiving years for a tight end. They've got the big wide receivers. They've had a lot of injuries on the O line. They're starting two rookie corners. They're second and third round draft picks. One thing that's evident in the little bit of film that I've watched so far is those guys have improved quite a bit. And you know, this should be a good football game. It's our home finale. I hope our fans will come out and, just like they have our last two home games, be a big part of it.
Okay, and we now know, too, there is still a mathematical possibility at the playoffs. It does, first of all, bear on Monday Night Football with the Lions and whether they win or lose. You said something after the game Monday. I wonder if you would elaborate again here for the audience tonight, that in terms of this last game, you would want this team to respond no matter what because it's the next game. It's the most important game, and let the other stuff fall where it may because you can't control the other stuff.
Yeah, right? Of course. Yeah, we don't have any control over that, and the scenarios are what they are. But in professional football, I mean, you're paid to play a full season. You're paid to play 16 games, and regardless of what happens, we're still playing for a lot. We're playing because this is one of our division rivals. You know, we have a chance to finish with a solid record, an improved record. And, you know, you never know. I mean, we're all rooting for the Cowboys tonight in Monday Night Football. You never know how this thing's going to work out playoff wise. And, you know, as I've told the team, the final chapter has not been written on this season. So, you know, we can't, even though we all feel bad about the loss in New Orleans, we've got to pick ourselves up and get ready to go.
Most important game is the next game.
Always.
And that will be on Sunday. Coach, thank you.
Okay.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM. Home of the Bucs.